What Would Joondalli Watkins Do acknowledges the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today. We would also like to pay our respects to elders past, present, and future.
To leave a room the same, if not better, than the state in which you entered it. It doesn't have to be big things, it can be as little as a smile.
Does what we wear really matter? What about taking a call while we're at the checkout? Or neglecting to RSVP? In a rude modern world, what would Joondalli Watkins do? While the Order of Australia recipient quite literally wrote the book on manners, we're asking what that legacy really means today. Your host, Jodie Bashay-McLean, has had the privilege of working with the late Joondalli Watkins for over 36 years. Now, Jodie is picking up the baton with one key question. Is etiquette dead and buried? Or does the modern world need Miss Dalli's teachings now more than ever? The world inhabited by Gen Z might feel incomprehensible to the generations that came before. But are we too hard on Zoomers? Today, we talk to 20-year-old model and occupational therapy student Grace Hayden about manners, privilege, and the real rudeness that comes with presumption.
Hi, Grace.
Hello.
It's lovely to have you with us today. I'm very excited about having the voice of Gen Z. Or is it Z? What do you say?
I say Gen Z.
Yes. I'm trying to not say Gen Z and be an individual and perhaps not follow Sesame Street and say the voice of Gen Z. So no pressure. I haven't had anyone in this, generational space here. I've had a guest previous, but our topic is going to be centered around your generation and what they think.
Pressure.
Because I believe that there is a conversation, and I say this with the greatest respect because I have three sons and there's much eye rolling at home and they're constantly correcting me on my beliefs and saying that it's different now and you need to have a different opinion or you need to be more open. Mm-hmm. And I thought, who better to get on today than Grace Hayden? You are one of our models. You're also studying at university. What are you studying?
Occupational therapy.
Are you enjoying it?
I am. Yeah. So I'm doing that part-time and I've just taken on a new role with Channel 7. I'm going to be part of the spring racing coverage for them.
Oh, that's fantastic. How exciting.
It's very exciting. So
what does that mean? We're going to see you on television, on Channel 7?
Yes, you will. All throughout October and a little bit of November, I'll be doing the spring racing coverage between Melbourne and Sydney, which is really exciting.
Does that mean you get to wear gorgeous frocks?
I sure do.
So what's your official role? What will you be called? Are you a 7 Sport racing reporter? Is that the official title?
Yeah, I mean, it's more fashion I'll be interviewing celebrities on the day, talking race day atmosphere. So, yeah.
I often watch reporters and I think they're so brave because you've got to go up to somebody and basically interrupt them. And that takes a lot of confidence. How do you do that?
I mean, you have a job to do, I guess, and you're not going to go up to someone and say, oh, I need an interview. Mm. You approach it in a way that's, hi, I'm Grace. I'm from Channel 7. Do you mind if I chat to you today?
So you ask permission?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if someone was coming up to you, I guess you wouldn't like it if they said, oh, I need an interview now.
Yes. And I do believe that, you know, it's a wonderful confirmation about what we're doing here, using manners.
Exactly.
And look, at the end of the day, the celebrities are there for a reason and being interviewed and being on screen or whether it's a photograph, that's part of their job, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. But still, it's about using your manners and asking permission, I guess, and saying, are you okay with this? And I mean, I've grown up with my dad, obviously. Matt Hayden.
I've met your mum and dad. They're lovely, lovely people.
They're so beautiful.
He's a bit scary, your dad. He's
very scary?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
I know.
He's a gentle giant.
I know he is, but that's that first impression. He's so tall And but he is, you're right, he's a lovely, lovely man.
He is.
Is it hard being Grace Hayden, Matt Hayden's daughter? Do you find there's been any, has there been advantages? And I know, and I say this with the greatest respect, because I do know that children of people of notoriety, sometimes there's a little bit of a struggle in things that they do. Has it been easy for you, or sometimes has it been a little bit tough?
I think there's been times, yes, where it's been challenging because people like to have an idea of you, or they say, oh, that's Matt Hayden's daughter. But I think it's given me so many amazing opportunities. I'm forever grateful.
As you said, has opened a lot of doors for you. But at the same time, sometimes people can be presumptuous or judgmental in some ways. Have you experienced any situations like that, or has it been something you've been taught by your mum and dad to rise above and move on?
I think you have to rise above and move on. If you react, that's what people want, I think, anyway. But I think when you are given an opportunity, you often have to work a lot harder to prove yourself in that situation. Well, I feel like I have to work harder to prove myself. You feel like people have a perceived standard that you're up to, especially in a role that I'm going into. I think it's similar to what Dad's doing now post-career, and you feel an expectation to be on par or be amazing. But I'm learning, and I need to remind myself that I'm learning and not take it to heart too much.
Sure. And people will give unsolicited opinions. I think for some it's a rite of passage that they think it's okay, and they don't always understand the impact that things like that have. We've had a lovely chat so far, and I've totally forgotten to ask you about your favourite quote. We do this with every one of our guests, and we ask, is there a saying or a quote that resonates with you that aligns to this concept of good manners and etiquette? And if you do have, well, I know you have one, would you share it with us?
Of course. So my quote that I love to live my life by is that to leave a room the same, if not better, than the state in which you entered it. It doesn't have to be big things. It can be as little as a smile. And it's using acts like respect, humility, integrity, kindness as your
superpowers?
Yeah, I think so.
So who instilled this thought or this saying in you? Is this a Hayden family tradition?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Hayden family, what do you call it, philosophy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's lovely. I think, you know, whether you're going to have a coffee or you're going to the post office, every time you interact with someone, making sure that you leave a lasting impression. There's a saying by Jeff Bezos, one of his, you know, mantras, his, you know, positive man mantras. When he talks about brand, he says, what do people say about you when you leave the room? And that, some people sort of take that as, oh, they're saying good things about you, or they're gossiping behind your back. Ultimately, what we aim for in business, because all of us are a brand. Grace Hayden's a brand. Jodie Bashay-McLean is a brand. June Daly Watkins is a brand. The Podcast Boss is a brand.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we need to make sure that we are aligning to our brand, and that if you are someone who your brand message is good manners, etiquette, kindness, respect, that's what people...
Yeah, you live that.
You live that. So when you leave the room, that's the experience. Well, here's an interesting question. Okay. Social media. Mm-hmm. So you guys own it. You've grown up with it. It's your playground. It's your platform.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to remain stoic and on brand and authentic and kind and so forth? And I know you have a presence, Grace, because we also help in marketing that through Chic Management. How do you remain authentic and strong and all of those things? Because we have, and there's a term for these people, they're called keyboard warriors, that people jump online and they're quick to comment.
They're brutal, I would say. I think they forget that people have real emotions, and what you say matters and hurts sometimes. It's about blocking them out though, but it's hard. And back to your point about being authentic, I think it's hard as well. you have brands that come to you and you could easily say, yes, I'll do everything under the sun and I'll promote this and this, but not actually use it. And there's a lot of people that do that. And I think people are starting to catch on to that now, is because there's so much to consume out there. There's so much media. We have obviously newspaper, television. We have all the social media platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Be Real Now.
Is that a new one?
New one.
Be Real Now. Didn't even know that one. I've learned something. What? We'll come back to that. Keep going. Sorry.
Oh, good. No.
Be Real Now.
Be Real.
Be Real.
Yeah. It's a new one.
Note to self. I'll look that one up. Be Real.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of it, but it's just another platform that I feel like we don't really need. So you'll get a reminder on your phone and then you take a photo of what's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes a photo of your front camera. So it has both back and front camera.
So my question to you, Grace, representing Gen Z, why? Why do we need to do that? Is it, again, looking into...
I think it's something to do with being authentic. Okay. I think it's...
So there's no brand, there's no influencing, there's
no
product. It's just you, wherever you happen to be in the world that day,
yeah,
and you're taking a photo in front of you,
yeah,
and a photo of you taking a photo of you in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people will just look at that.
Yeah. So you have your friends on there and it's sharing it with them. I guess, why do we need that? We have already Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Snapchat. We have all of that already. I feel like it's kind of throwing into people's faces, this is what I'm doing today. And you can
easily... I worry about that, yes.
Yeah.
And that, again, can incite the warriors to perhaps, and they do like to do this, come on board and comment. And as you said before, they can be quite caustic and... Yeah, they can be very hurtful.
They can. And I don't think they realize that you actually do. Sometimes you read them and sometimes you just can't read them. No. I mean, I'm lucky that I don't really get a lot of mean comments, but I'm sure there are a lot of people that get a lot of mean comments and you just can't take them on board.
No.
My parents always say to me, your friends and your family know who you are, but the rest don't matter.
Wise words from the Haydens. You look at it too, you mentioned before about this authenticity and what's happening, because you are, I don't want to say an influencer of sorts, but...
It's such an awkward word.
It is an awkward word, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's so awkward, I think, because people have this weird idea of it being fake and posy, and because it is sometimes, but there also are influencers that promote things like cooking and... lifestyle pieces, and I wouldn't say they're the main thing that comes to your head when you think of an influencer. When you first think of an influencer, you go, oh, it's someone posing in front of a camera, looking amazing, showing their life off, talking to camera. Hi guys, so today I'm doing this and I'm going to my Pilates class and getting my coffee with my friends. That's what you think of. Is it not what you think of?
It is. And I think with the regulations, the way they're going now, and I know we've had this conversation about what you can and cannot say and when you're endorsing products, I think also brands want authenticity as well.
They do.
Because we are living in this age now where people, if you're promoting a brand and you're not authentic, you're less likely to have engagement. People will
exactly.
just, we have
this. Because it's like everyone else.
Yes. And you just flick through very quickly. And whilst it's about the person, I like to call them digital content creators. I think that's a better terminology. And, you know, your generations are the masters. And you are able to look at all these different platforms when you're sort of scrolling on social media, because it is part. But how do you fit it all in? It's part of your lives. I often wonder about that, but you've managed to balance life because you're studying. You've got this fabulous new role with Seven Racing, and you also do the modelling work you do and studying, as I said before, but also, you know, different types of study. And you're a family person. And you're heading over to, you're going somewhere special this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to India with Dad this weekend.
Fantastic. That's an interesting place to visit.
It is. I've been once before. Mum, Dad and I went over for my 16th birthday. And we loved it. We went through all the orphanages and everyone in India, the people are beautiful. They just make you feel so special. My birthday, I had 3 cakes delivered to me on my birthday. It was so beautiful. And they sung every time and breakfast. It was a big singing show. I'll always remember it.
How gorgeous.
It's just cultural. I love travel.
Mm.
Different cultures and how they interact with each other and do different things. It's so interesting.
Do you think it's important when you do travel that you understand a culture that you go into? Were you ever given, and your dad knows India very well, does he give you any cultural advice or tips when you travel?
Yeah, I think when you go to India, he said to me already that you've got blonde hair, blue eyes, you're going to stand out whether you like it or not. It's just you're going to be different.
Mm.
And that's okay. It's just that's what it is. But you can't go and dressed.
Can't be revealing.
Yes.
You have to be respectful.
Yeah. Mm. And I think keeping that in mind, because you don't want to be uncomfortable either.
No.
And you don't want to be making anyone else feel uncomfortable. It's just being smart about situations that you put yourself in, I guess.
You do. I had a trip, my first international trip, doing lessons. I thought it was really strange. I was asked to go to India, who I would assume it culturally they are one of the most, as you say, they're beautiful people, they're well-mannered, there's a lot of history in their knowledge of respectful behaviour and so forth. So I was asked to go there to do a joint venture through Austrade in teaching university students about international etiquette, and I was working with a company there. And it was a tip that someone from Austrade also gave me. They said, try and learn a few of the nuances of the cultural expectations of India and doing business there. And I thought, okay, great advice. So I found a book, and this is how long ago it was, Grace, because we still read books. We didn't look it on the internet. And it was
I
called,
love having a physical book.
I do
it's
too.
The best.
The book was called Kiss, Bow or Handshake. So
wow,
it gave you and it gave you an insight of wherever you went in the world, what you need to understand, because business etiquette is really important. First impressions, you want to build a relationship with these people, whatever country you're in. And sometimes we can be, and I say we collectively, not Australians, we as a world can say, well, this is how I do it. So, and this is good etiquette and good business etiquette. So therefore I must be doing the right thing.
No, it can be completely different.
It can be completely different. So I read in this book about doing business there, and one of the greetings is namaste. During COVID, it replaced the handshake. Did you know that internationally, a lot of people would do namaste?
I mean, it makes sense because you can't exactly handshake through a screen.
No, and also when people were meeting one another, even though they shouldn't have been out, but when they were allowed to come out and they're wearing masks, a lot of people were doing namaste rather than a handshake, and I thought that was rather lovely. But when I went there, it was a million years ago, so there was no COVID about. But what I did when I met someone new, because I read a little bit of this information in Kiss, Bow or Handshake about how you do business in India, I shook hands, which is an international sign of we're doing business. And it's interesting, things like that can change the perception that you have with someone, that when you shake their hand or you don't shake their hand. And, you know, either can sometimes, if you leave a handshake out, it can make people feel very offended.
Yeah.
And then some people who you're not quite sure whether they want to shake hands. So there's so many different possible outcomes. But getting back to me learning namaste, so what I would do is I'd meet someone, I'd shake their hand, and then I would bow and do namaste. And they would look at me and go, oh, and they would thank me. And I think, and that wasn't the reason I did it to be thanked. I just wanted them to know that I respect their culture.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
Definitely. When someone comes to Australia, you wouldn't want them to disrespect our culture.
No.
It's another thing about manners, I guess. It makes you feel special and important when someone takes the time to know your culture or know something about you.
Going back to
a coffee as well, when someone writes your name or remembers your name, it makes you feel really good.
It does. I like that there's an ad on TV where the guy says, what's your name? And she says to him, I'm sorry, I've got a boyfriend. And I love it.
I've seen that one.
And all he really wants is to know a name to put it on the coffee.
Oh, no.
I think I may have done that once when I was first asked, but anyway, that was a long time ago. Okay, so I would like to sort of ask you a question about Gen Z, because there are a lot of assumptions out there. And being authentic, Grace, I have to say this. Sometimes I've heard myself say, this generation. And I've used that terminology when I'm talking about my children. I would say to my husband, this generation, they just don't, dare I say, use the word, they're a little bit entitled, or they've had it quite easy. And I've been corrected by my boys in saying something like that, because I think we can get into this generational bashing and this war. And, you know, when you hear that, and have you ever heard that, it is a huge Gen Z issue about the assumption that your generation have it so easy and are a little bit lazy and a little bit entitled. And I mean, we read it in the press. Yeah. Miss Dally, bless her heart, she used to say, and she coined the phrase, and she said it was the me generation. She felt generationally there was a shift. It was all about me, the individual, and then the other person or the people around me. And it's interesting, and I'm sorry, I'm continuing on, but I needed to make this point with you. I was given an analogy very similar to when we talk about the me generation. And I think it's my generation has the wrong perception, because when you are in a plane and the air steward says to you, the oxygen mask will drop from the ceiling, you need to put the oxygen on first before you assist others. And they said that's what the me generation is about. They're about making sure they're okay, because then they're a better version of themselves to go out and be who they are in the outside world.
I think we are very much like that.
Do you?
Especially after COVID, I think people were forced to make sure they were okay. And I mean, we saw people having their own business ventures outside of work. And it was a creative time, but it was also a negative time for people. And I think it forced people to be a bit more about me.
Mm.
And I think we are really worried about what other people think of us is a negative side to us.
Is that because of social media?
Yes, I think so. Because, I mean, you're putting yourself out to the world. And I personally can't think of a life without my phone. And that's a bit scary.
No, but I appreciate your honesty in saying that. A lot of people wouldn't admit to that.
And I mean, it's hard to admit to, because I guess, yes, it can be seen in a negative way. You can't live your life without your phone. Oh, my goodness. Who are you?
Mm.
But I went on a trip last week with my brother and my dad to Yeppoon. We went to this amazing surf park that's just opened. But we went through a lot of places that didn't have reception.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of times I picked up my phone to just use it, it was, and I knew that there was no reception and I couldn't use my phone, but I would just pick it up and go to use it and go, okay, can't use that because I don't have any reception.
So it becomes habitual.
Very habitual.
I think we're all guilty of that. I think there's a sense of, it's almost like it's a security blanket.
Yeah.
And I've noticed this with my wonderful PA, that wherever she goes in the office, she's holding her phone. And sometimes I'll say to her, why are you holding your phone? And she'll go, oh, am I? And not even realize. The interesting thing is we have to learn, and your generation is perhaps the one that's going to teach us how we can have the phone, have social media, have this connection in our lives, but still not be...
Have boundaries. Yeah.
I teach business etiquette, and I say this in my class at Griffith University. I do the business leaders group. Work with them every year. And I will say to them, you have to be very mindful of your phone, that when you're communicating with someone, this is my perception.
Yeah.
If I have a phone in my hand, the person that I'm communicating with is going to assume that I'm not engaged. Is that entirely true with your generation? So if you had two friends chatting away, you both have your phone in your hand, do you see that as a slight? Is that saying, well, I'm really not engaged in this conversation because I'm thinking about my phone, or I'm going to quickly look at it? How do you change that perception with baby boomers?
It's hard, because I do believe that when I have a conversation with a friend, I will have my phone in my hand, and they will most likely as well. I think it can be a distraction. And when someone doesn't disconnect from it fully when they're having a conversation with you, it doesn't make you feel good. It makes you feel like everything else on their phone is way more important than what you have to say to them. And it's not a nice feeling. But I do think that if I was talking to someone my age, I wouldn't really think twice about having my phone in my hand. But if I was talking to someone of an older generation,
like me, you can say
not
it.
Like you, but I mean,
someone over 55.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, I think I would consider not having it.
That's called manners, Grace. What you've just unpacked there is the sense of you're working out the most effective way to communicate with someone. So you're taking in a generational perspective and thinking, well, if I'm chatting with someone of my generation, no big deal. I'm talking to someone who's certainly, you know, a boomer. I probably would take the phone out.
Yeah, I would reconsider, yeah.
Do boomers need to change? Do we need to be a little bit more relaxed in our views? Is it because essentially the person's engaged, they're engaged. They just happen. And this is where my children would get on board and say to me, but Mum, just because I've got phone in my hand doesn't mean I'm not listening to you. That's your perception.
Yes, I think you do, because it doesn't mean that. I mean, it's really hard because I want to say, yes, it doesn't make you feel listened to, because sometimes if you were to have a conversation and someone looks at their phone 3 or 4 times they're talking to you, that's disrespect. I would say that's like no manners at all, and they're not listening to you.
Mm.
But if they have their phone in their hand and they're having a conversation with you and they don't look at it, I think that's okay.
I think you're right. I think the key, as I said previously, it is about understanding how someone wants to be communicated to and with, and understanding the triggers that are going to, I mean, you certainly wouldn't go for a job interview with your phone in your hand.
No way.
And we're pretty well versed on turning our phone off when we're at an event or a funeral or a speaking event. So we're learning, but the phone isn't going anywhere.
No.
And
it's getting more and more utilized, I think. I mean, everything's on our phones.
As I mentioned earlier, you were born and the phone was here. It's been around forever. It's been part of your life. It's like, you know, when I was born, there was television. It may have been in black and white, but there was television.
But still.
So understanding that the phone is here to stay, that the phone is about connection. And I think this is perhaps, would you agree, where the confusion may lies? That's how you connect with people through your phone. So I may be a person, and this is a question that I've been waiting for you to come on and chat about. When we talk about this connection and phone, and that's how you communicate effectively. So you send me a text message.
Yes.
And I'm a chatter. So I want to ring you and give you my answer. I have been chastised by the Gen Zs in my family saying, no, send a text. If I text you, you must text in return. I really don't want a phone call.
Worst person to ask this because I'm a chatter too, and it's most likely a FaceTime call.
Oh, really?
It's terrible. I prefer to see someone's face and talk to them. I mean, yes, I'm a texter as well, but I prefer to talk to you rather than text you.
You like the conversation.
Yeah, I think so. But there's also so much else going on my phone is that I sometimes don't look at my texts and I prefer a call, because it's quicker that I can say, okay, how are you, and have a chat, and I don't have to go into this long-winded text message.
Okay. All right. So this is you've just sort of helped me with another burning question that I have. So my boys never have that phone out of their hand, yet I can send a text message and they never respond. And they'll say to me, but I didn't see it. And I said, but it never leaves your hand. So I'm assuming that they're filtering their messages, and no, they don't need to talk to me, so they'll just let that one go. Is that the case? Is that
yes?
Oh,
I hate to break it to you, but yes, that is 100% what's happening.
Is it?
No, well, not filtering it. I just think there's so much else happening on your phone.
There
that
is.
Priorities kind of go to certain things, whether that be social media or friends group chats or whatever it might be on your phone, emails. Maybe.
Well, I've managed, and because, you know, the phone is this sacred piece of equipment. Heaven forbid if I look over their shoulder while they're looking at it. It's almost like I've totally invaded their world, their privacy.
And yeah.
So, and I like to tease and say, oh, really? And they'll think, what have you seen?
Mum, what are you doing?
Yes.
Stop.
Yep, not allowed to look at it. So that begs a question. There's so much going on and you're able to multitask, which I find, and that's something I've noticed, that, you know, you can have all of these things going on your phone. I see all of the messages coming through. It's incredible. So you've got about 10, possibly 10 conversations going on at the same time. Would you say your generation is more resilient, has an ability to multitask better? I mean, if we're looking at positives, we've spoken about Gen Z having this banner above them saying that, you know, they're the me generation, they're entitled, they expect things. I think you're exposed to more. I think that's part of the reason that you're willing to, you want more. You want it, you know, yes.
You want it now.
And there are some that will say, oh, but it took me 20 years to get this. And it's funny because sometimes I can hear myself in the back of my mind's about to say that and think, oh, that's okay. If they want it now, if they're going to work for it now, you're totally different to how we grew up. And I think generationally, we need to understand that and we need to have more patience with that and we need to be kinder and more respectful of that, that Gen Z are doing it differently.
Yeah, you do. But I also think we need to learn from your generation as well and not be so me, because there's, as we say, it makes you feel special when someone goes out of their way to tell you you did something well. And I think our generation doesn't really do that a lot or isn't great at it.
Do they do it on social media?
Yes, but it's so surface level, I think.
I saw an article the other day. I don't know whether you saw it. And it was a social media, what do you call it when it goes crazy?
Viral.
Viral, thank you. That's me being a boomer. I didn't know that word. When it goes viral. So this person was doing, you know, that pay it forward messaging that has been around for years. So what happened was there's someone at the supermarket and their groceries are going through, and this social media person, influencer, I guess is the word,
yeah,
popped in and paid for those person's groceries without their knowledge. And they said, oh, look, they said, oh, my goodness, why did you do that? And they said, I want to pay it forward. Thank you very much. So there was this lovely, kind gesture, which I'm all for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what we're talking about, doing the right thing, being kind and respectful. But then they used that opportunity without the permission of the person that they paid their groceries for and used it as a sort of, look at me, look how philanthropic I am. Look how wonderful I am. Look what I've done. Aren't I a great person? And the person that they paid the groceries for is sort of plastered all over the social media and quite embarrassed by it. And maybe that person didn't have, I mean, I've been there and it breaks my heart when I see someone who may not have enough money, and I'm just happy to, you know, help out if I can, but I don't film it.
No.
What is that all about, Grace? Why are these social media people doing it? Do you think it's wrong? Do you think it's right? What's your take on it?
Oh, it depends what it is. I think.
So that one.
I think it's not being genuine.
It isn't.
I don't think that's okay. If you don't ask for someone's permission, I don't think that's okay. I think I've seen certain ones where they'll start with $1. And they'll say, do you want $1 or do you want to double it and pass it to the next person? And it'll go through a series of people and it might get to $10. And someone will say, oh, no, I want to keep that. And there'll be social experiments. I think that's what they call them.
Yes, yes.
Like that. And I think they're okay because it's teaching not to be selfish and, you know, pass it forward. It's a nice gesture to someone. But then the grocery thing, I think because it's, I don't know. That's really embarrassing. If that was, I wouldn't want that.
I think.
And not genuine either.
No, I guess the thought and the question I have is it ever okay to promote your random acts of kindness for commercial gain?
No.
It's not, is it?
No. And, but they do, they go so viral. I see them all the time, but not for the right reason, I don't think. I think it's too, look at me. Mm. I just,
where the me generation
comes and from. I don't think that's okay at all. I think it's disrespectful to the person, and it's just not okay. I don't understand why you would feel you have a right to post something like that.
Yeah. And I guess it's all part of the marketing, isn't it? And, and you know, perhaps originally they did come from a place of goodwill and kindness, but it's sort of
extended
blown out of the water.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So here's a thought. Are you familiar with any of the terminologies that are being bandied around? I think if you're a fan of the Urban Dictionary, you may see some of them in there. Have you heard, and I hadn't heard of this one, that your generation can be referred to as snowflakes?
I had to Google this. I had no idea what it was before coming into this podcast.
I didn't either. So I was just being clever, coming up with something that maybe you didn't know or I could share with you. And it was a learning for me. So can you share with our listeners what a snowflake is?
Sure.
Not the one that we have in the snow. This is another. So this is sort of a, it's almost a bit of a smackdown. It's a sarcastic
term. It is. It's saying we're fragile. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like and a snowflake.
Yeah. Fragile little snowflakes. I don't think that's right.
I don't either. Can I use you as an example? Okay. When we talk about being fragile, I think your generation, your age group is pretty resilient. When you think about, and you shared this with me, so you were the first compulsory prep intake.
Yes.
So you started school at age, was it 4.5, 5?
Yeah.
So in my generation, we went to kindergarten and then we went to grade 1. Yeah. But you did prep, so you're a year younger, and then you started grade 1.
Yes.
You were the first grade 7 to be inducted into high school. So I went to high school in grade 8, but you went to high school in grade 7.
Mm-hmm.
You were the first year of ATAR, so your examination. So it went from an OP score
to
ATAR.
And that was during COVID.
Yes. And you were in the class of 2020. So school in that year was at home.
Half of the school year, I would say, was on Zoom. That was a challenge and a half.
Was it hard to adapt?
Yeah, I think because everyone was scared of obviously COVID. No one wanted to get COVID. They were worried about family and friends, and everyone was scared of it. But then you also had school trying to navigate education, and then this whole new system on top of that everyone's still trying to figure out. It was a challenge because working out how to spend all day at a computer at home with all the outdoor distractions, it was really hard.
Okay. Do you believe having the connection to social media and your networks kept you sane?
Yes, because you were able to connect with friends easily. And even though you couldn't see them in person, you could see what they were up to throughout the day. And I think social media and our phones were sort of our saving grace.
They were, weren't they?
During that time.
Because we were isolated.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid if the internet and Wi-Fi went down, we'd be in a world of pain. And I have to admit, with my team, so we were working remotely, and I know some of them, there were eye rolls when I'd say, we're going to connect every morning and we're going to connect every afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, can't we just do it via phone? I said, no, we need to see one another. And I think generationally, it did save, I think, a lot of our emotional intelligence, the way we felt. We were connected with other people because it was tough. It was really tough.
Would you say that we're more reliant on our phones since COVID?
I think we are. I think we had a period where it became, and that's even my generation, and it has now become the safety net. And we do things by habit, and if we were doing it, it's a very hard habit to break. You know, some people are putting it up there with other types of addictions. So
I would agree.
So sometimes, it was good that you did a bit of a detox when you went surfing.
Yeah, it actually felt so good. You don't realize how addicted you are until you stop. Mm. And that picking up my phone constantly in the car was just, what am I doing? Mm. But also, you take photos on your phone and you are able to connect with family. Like, mum was at home with my younger brother. So it's just a positive and a negative thing all at the same time. Detoxes are great from it sometimes, but also it allows you to connect with people and share.
Mm. Grace, as I mentioned, you've had an interesting few years since PrEP.
Yeah.
So I would ask you the question, do you think Gen Z's are snowflakes? Are you a snowflake?
No, I don't think I'm a snowflake. I think with being a snowflake, I think you can take it as we can be vulnerable, and I think that's a good thing. And I think we are more vulnerable. But I also don't think we're fragile in life situations. I think we are very resilient and are taking on the world's challenges. And we saw that through COVID and all the wild and wonderful things that we go through in life. I think, yes, we didn't go through world wars, but we did go through a pandemic and survived. And now we're living our life differently, but we're okay.
Do you think Gen Z have a voice? Do you think they, my generation, you know, I was raised where children should be seen and not heard.
Mm.
And generationally, your generation will say, no, I don't agree. So yeah. Is that across the board? Do you find that more amongst your peers?
I think our voice is loud. I think we have so much. Everyone has access to say whatever they want on the internet, whether that be positive or negative. And yeah, everyone has their a right to share their opinion now. And it's more accepted, I think. And people, that's where influencers come on board, I guess, is that someone that you look up to might be promoting health and fitness. And I mean, there's certainly people that I follow that are a health and fitness influencer. And you look to them for advice and motivation and healthy eating or whatever that comes in that bracket. But it can be anyone that shares that what they're passionate about. I mean, even you here today, Jodie, you're doing this amazing podcast on manners. And how incredible is it that you can share this with such a broad and diverse range of people?
Well said, and that's true, because to me it is what I'm passionate about, and what I'm trying to really do is I find it hard to put my face out on social media, and you guys do it so well. Because in my generation, I don't know if you've ever heard the term a humble brag. Do you know what that
is? Yes, yeah.
You know, look at me. Oh, my gosh, I've just won an award for being fabulous. Oh, geez, it's hard managing my day, you know. And it's not. I'm not saying everyone that's on social media in my demographic are doing that. But, gee, it's hard. And it's breaking a mindset. And I probably am not your typical boomer, because I look at your generation and what you do online, and that's part of my business. Mm. So I manage people that do that, and I understand the methodology and why they do it and all of those things. But I'm learning, and I think that's probably one of the key factors in this generational, and I don't want to use the word war, because I believe we're breaking barriers, and strangely enough, I think COVID helped us understand your generation a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we both have to have an open mind.
Yeah, to each other's opinions.
I
for
agree.
Sure. Both of us need to be a bit more relaxed and willing and open to having conversations about it and not being so uptight and, no, this is the right way. Because I think we can both get in those head spaces where, no, I'm right. No, I'm right. And it's important to step back and listen and have manners to want to listen to someone else.
Mm. Listening's not an easy feat.
No.
A lot of people get so excited because they've got this thought in their head and they interrupt and they're not listening to what the other person's saying. Getting back to the snowflake, I have one last question I'd like to ask you, because I've just realised something, that term is quite redundant, because if you were fragile and all of those things, you wouldn't achieve as much as you do.
No.
At the ages that you are. And I see, whether it's through the agency, I see it with you, I see it with my own children, they don't want to walk the path that my generation did. They don't want to get to that milestone by 30, you should have done this, by 40, you should have done this, and 50. And maybe we need to change our generational thinking that you don't have to do it our way.
No.
And embrace it.
And everyone can do it their own individual way. And I think that's sort of the future, is that everyone's, I don't know, a piece of this big puzzle.
We are, aren't we? And we've got to all live cohesively.
Exactly.
In this jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly.
Grace, I want to talk to you about kindness and what it means to your peers. Well, your generation, I think, have a better understanding and give respect and space to people in terms of gender, sexuality, neurodiversity, in understanding about labeling and all of, you know, putting labels on people, is it right, is it wrong, about pronouns. Is it a conversation that is had with your peers, with groups, or is it something that's become the norm? It's not something that you go, oh, okay, that person's fluid or whatever. There's no, my generation's very much putting labels on things. And I don't say that disrespectfully.
But
what is your generation doing with this new world that we're living in, that we're sharing space, no longer, and I've had conversations with people of my generation who talk about pronouns and they don't understand them.
Yeah.
And they don't understand why and why they're necessary. Is it something that makes conversation with your generation, your peers?
I don't really think it's a super big topic that we talk about. I think you just, whatever makes someone happy, I think go for it. If you want to have put a label on a pronoun, go for it. Why not? I think, do we have to understand why?
No.
I just don't think it's really any of our business. If that's something that you want to do and you choose to live your life like that, do it. Obviously, within reason. But I think in that sort of topic, if that makes you happy, I think why not?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It is about us minding our own business, really, isn't it?
With all respect, though.
It is. How does that mean? I may not understand it. That's fine. I don't have to understand it. I just need to mind my own business. And if that person chooses to have to be referred to as a pronoun, I should respect that.
Yeah. Because it's the same as Mr. and Mrs., right? Mm-hmm. I think of it like that. It's, hello, Mrs.
Brown.
Yeah, exactly. It's a respect thing. And if you want to be known as whatever it might be, they, or do it.
Mm.
It's just being, again, open and respectful of someone else's wishes. And I mean, you might not agree with it, but that's not really your place to agree with it. It's someone else's life. And if they choose to do that, then...
Well, do you know what, Grace? I think part of having good manners is also minding our own business sometimes, isn't it?
I mean...
It is. Yeah, in a nice way.
I think in a nice way, in a nice way. It is. Because you don't have to always take everything to heart, or just, you know what, let's just mind our business, and if someone wants to do this, great. If they don't, then it's just none of my business. I'm going to worry about, I guess, yeah, it's the same with I'm going to worry about me.
Bring that oxygen mask down, take the oxygen, and then you can help others.
Exactly. But do it in a nice way.
Grace, it's been an absolute delight. Thank you for coming on
today.
Thank
you for having me. I've had so much fun.
Well, that's good.
Thanks for joining us on What Would June Daly Watkins Do? Don't forget to subscribe to the show on your favourite podcast app so you'll never miss an episode.